Okay, we're thinking about a fascinating, fascinating, fascinating study.
I bought the book, by the way.
You did?
I didn't get it.
It's fascinating.
Sorry, it's more hard to get.
Fascinating study. It's the first issue about change, and that is what this author, Katie Milkman, calls impulsivity. Right? The challenge when we think about change, so she's talking about it in terms of secular behaviors, of people going to the gym or making good choices, is the impulsivity issue of like, I don't want to get off the couch and go to the gym. I'm comfortable where I am. So my impulse says, stay right here and don't move.
It's
exactly. Oh, so that's beautiful. Maybe you could put it in the words of James in the book Varieties of Religious Experience. He talks about our moral and practical attitude at any given time is always a resultant of two sets of forces within us. Impulses pushing us one way and obstructions and inhibitions holding us back. Yes, yes, say the impulses. No, no, say the inhibitions. So I'm trying to make healthy choices. So I'm standing next to the fridge and the impulse says, find the chocolate chip stick in the freezer. Right? That's the here and now. That's the impulsive Yetzirah. And that's why I think it's interesting that Chazal, when it's good, but that's true. That's like the that's what Chazal. Interestingly, in the Avos Reb Nosson, Chazal say that what does it mean that Yetzer Lev HaAdam Rami Ne'urav, that when a person is born, they're born with the Yetzer Hara, and only when they mature do they develop a Yetzer Tov. That's what it says in the Avos Reb Nosson. Only when a person becomes bar or bas mitzvah do you develop a Yetzer Tov. So probably what that means is that when we're born, we're all driven by that impulsivity. You cannot negotiate with a four-year-old to say, don't eat that candy now, it will hurt later. That line of reasoning, as we all have seen, you know, children and grandchildren, it does not work. Because children are hardwired for impulsivity. That is the definition of the Yetzer Hara. They never think about what the consequences of later are. They're only interested in the impulsive yes for right now. So to get a kid to sign on for a project that's going to be a three-week project that's going to be beneficial to them, it's like so beyond. It doesn't work. Only when you have someone who develops, and then some people, you know, they could be 3 or they could be 83, and they never grow up. They can never see the consequences of their actions. And sometimes that can be very tragic, right? Things that people say, did you think for 10 seconds before you said it? Would you think about what that person's going to feel like in 10 minutes after you said that? Maybe the impulse was to send that text right now. But if you thought about it for 10 minutes, for 10 seconds, for 1 second, what's the consequences of that? So this is why I think that the Yetzer Hara is associated in Chazal with the here and now, with impulsivity, right? So it's true, it's a tiny Yetzer Hara when it comes to dieting, but it's the question of principle. It's like, how do we live our lives? So there are a bunch of strategies that we can consider, some of which you might say are intuitive, and some of them actually I think are counterintuitive in a certain sense. So maybe the most intuitive is what they call in the research temptation bundling. So we can call that incentivizing. I'm not going to call it bribing, because this is a really interesting ha'ara. Rabbi Yanki Horowitz, he's a brilliant mechanech. He deals with a lot of, you know, children who have challenges and supporting parents, all these kinds of things. He distinguishes in a great way, at least it makes me feel better about things, between incentives and bribes. He says, when we incentivize our kids or our students, we're not bribing them. He says, a bribe is when you motivate someone extrinsically for something that they should not do. That's a bribe. When you reward someone for something that they should do, that is an incentive. Oh, that's exactly it. You already saw the Rambam. Take a look at the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva. Chil cheated.
Yeah, cheated.
Take a look at source number one. This is exactly what it is. Says the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva Perek Yud, Kol Osek B'Torah, a person who learns Torah, Kedei L'Kabel Schar, to receive reward, O Kedei Sholo Tegi Allah Peronio, so they shouldn't be punished, Hariz Osek Shalo Lishma. That's Mitoch Shalo Lishma. That's exactly what you said. V'chola Osekba, a person who engages in Talmud Torah, lowly or not because they're afraid, no one's threatening them, no parent is coercing them, no Rebbe is standing over them, v'lo l'kabel schar, not to receive a reward, elu b'nei avas ha'odun kola aretz, but just because we love the Ribbono Shalom, we love it. Hariza Osekba lishma. And, so now here comes the key line, la'olam, third line, yasok avim b'torah, a person should learn Torah, afilu shalo lishma. Even Shalom Lishma. There's nothing wrong with that. Adarabba, you notice the phrase, La'olam. This is an across-the-board principle. It's not, you know, maybe for a concession. No, this should be the standard operating procedure, should be Shalom Lishma. Afilu Shalom Lishma. Why? Shemitoch Shalom Lishma, Balishma. Therefore, when we educate people, we got to start at the basis of Shalom Lishma. So what constitutes Shalom Lishma? So look in the second source. I gave you the whole thing, but I highlighted the key steps. The Rambam in the Pirush HaMishnayos, in his commentary on the Mishnayos in Perek Chelek, in the 10th Perek of Sanhedrin, look what he says. He talks about it. He says, this is not ideal, but what do? You take a young child, you see the first bold? You tell him, Kra, learn. Ve'etein lecha egozim ote'inim. I'll give you nuts, I'll give you candy. Ve'etin l'chama advash.
Need more than that.
Oh, so then the Rambam says, what happens when the child gets a little bit older? Look at the next bold. V'yomer lo, then you should tell the child when he gets a little older. Malamdo, his teacher will tell him, Kra, you should read. Ve'ekach l'cha min olam yafin. I'll buy you Nike sneakers. Oh, begodim chamudim. That's right. I'll give you the raffle for the jewelry. This Rambam, you're talking about 1,000 years ago. The Rambam says it. Then what happens? You graduate from Nike sneakers and jewelry.
Now we're talking.
Next, you see the next bold. Ve'etin lecha dinar echad o shnei dinarim.
Money.
Amazon gift cards. Right? That's the next level. I'll give you a coin. Then, interestingly, next bold. You should learn kedei shetia rosh v'dain v'chabducha b'nei adam. Learn because people will give you kavod. Because as we get older, okay, maybe we're not excited about the Butterfingers or the Snickers, but then people give you kavod, they'll stand up for you. Then the Rambam says, the last line is a pretty sharp line, interestingly. V'kolzeh, you see the last bold in the section. V'kolzeh meguna. All of this is pretty distasteful, honestly. V'amnam, however, yitztarech lemiyot seichel adam sheyasim tachlis hachachma davar achar zulos yachachma. The reality is that people are not strictly intellectual and inspired all the time. So this is a mahalach. The Rambam calls it maguna. On the other hand, he says la'olam, and the Yad HaChazaka says you should do it. So in our house, we're very into incentives. We have tons of incentives. There's mini siyums, then there's regular siyums, then there's mega siyums. Most of it involves either food or football, which is, you know, it's the equivalent of the Rambam's I'll give you nuts. Two of the boys went to the game. Baruch Hashem, it worked out okay. Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem. It worked out well.
Crazy.
Two of the boys went. But crazy. It used to be, let's say when the kids were younger, that was a big incentive. We'll get tickets to the football game. The Rambam would say, it's maguna, but it works. And it's a good thing, and there's nothing wrong with it. And when the kids are very little, you take them out for pizza, or you get them a game, or whatever. So this is the first mahalach, what they call temptation bundling. So in the research, what the Rambam is teaching, they call temptation bundling. So they say, what do they say? A person makes a Kabbalah, I'm only going to enjoy this particular thing in the context of something that I need to do. So in the book, one of the research projects they did was, Katie, Dr. Milkman, she says she made a Kabbalah that she was only going to watch a certain show that she really liked when she went to the gym. So it was a temptation bundling. She was incentivizing the thing that she had to do with the thing that she wanted to do. She was only going to watch the show when she was folding laundry. So instead of constantly procrastinating to fold the laundry. So on one level, perhaps, there is an element that the Rambam is telling us that temptation bundling is also okay. That's realistic. It's incentivizing ourselves. And it's not just true for kids. The Rambam says that's called shalom l'shma. That's number one. So I think in that regard, it's very intuitive. That's just the old school raffles and incentives. We got that. But I think there is another perspective on this, which as we become more mature, it's not easy, but maybe part of what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants us to understand is that actually there's something very deep of learning to control and to own our own destiny. Not that it's so easy and not that it comes easy, but there's a whole body of research that you're probably familiar with. I was made into a book called The Marshmallow Test, where they take a kid and they sit him down at a table and they have a researcher watching. So they put down one marshmallow and they tell the kid, if you wait 5 minutes, you'll get two. And they did this same experiment in a bunch of different ways, tons of different, right? You've heard of this experiment. And it's funny when you read the research, how they describe different kids. Some of them, they sit like this. They can't, they mamish like. Other ones, they're like, you know, they're looking at it. Some of them, they're playing with it. They're looking at it. Some of them eat it. But they do these unbelievable longitudinal studies. And what they have shown is that kids who are able to withstand that impulsivity to delay their gratification, it totally changes the trajectory of their life in every barometer of happiness and success. Socioeconomic, interpersonal, moral, spiritual, everything across the board. Now, it doesn't mean that a kid who ate the marshmallow is doomed. It's a muscle that we can build. But the idea, and this was such a watershed for the researchers, for the psychologists, that delay of gratification is a key for a healthy, balanced life ba'olam hazeh. Chazal were very sensitive to that. And so, yes, it's true that we want to motivate kids and ourselves with instant gratification. So sometimes we'll tell people, you're going to be the 10th man at the minyan. On some level, that pitch really is an instant gratification pitch because you're giving the person the kavod or the reward. Or we'll tell people, again, this is all spiritual, but it's the same principle of instant gratification of you're going to earn olam hazeh, olam haba. It's like in Mario, you're going to get two little coins. You go to Ketiyah Shofar, you're going to get olam haba. That's what we're telling the people, right? So that's one mahalach, even on a spiritual level. But the exact opposite mahalach is to say, Chevra, wait a second. Let's realize that by delaying that gratification, by teaching ourselves how to control our impulsivity, we're actually building a better life for ourselves in this world. And that's why I think it's interesting. When Moshe goes out, you see in Perek Yud Zayin in Pasuk Tes here in Sefer Shmos, Vayomer Moshe al Yehoshua b'char lanu anashim, v'tzehi lachem ba'amalek. When do they battle Amalek? Excuse me. When? Machar anochi nitzav al rosh ha-giva. Tomorrow. This word machar, it's omnipresent. It's the same thing that happens when you buy a car. You get a new car, you start seeing the same car all over the place because now you're paying attention to it. If you look throughout Tanakh, you will start to notice the word machar all over the place. Machar. Why dafka machar? I don't remember when, and I didn't have a chance to speak to her when I was preparing, but I remember I once had a conversation with my mother-in-law about this, about the ubiquitous nature of the word machar. What did the word machar mean?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
What is your mother-in-law? A psychologist?
No, she's a big-time Talmidei Chachama. Oh. She knows a lot. So oftentimes when I'm preparing, I'll discuss. But I don't remember when, but I remember just having a discussion about this with her, where she rattled off a couple of examples where you find this not just in Chumash, but also in Tanakh, that the Ribbono Shel Olam wants us to be able to say, you know what? It's not about living for today. It's let's think about tomorrow. Let's develop that inner muscle, that spiritual muscle that says, you know what, I can think about tomorrow. Because Amalek says, live for today. Eat, and tomorrow you'll die. Tomorrow's not relevant. Right? It's the Epicurean philosophy, so to speak. When we say to Amalek, we say, it doesn't mean we can't enjoy it, but maybe we should have it tomorrow. One of the big things that Bali Musar talk about in dealing with the Yetzer Hara is not to say, I'm not going to eat that, or I'm not going to go there, or I'm not going to say that. You know what they say? Tomorrow. I'll say it tomorrow.
So we're the real manana people.
That's right. That's right. You know what? We'll say it tomorrow. And you know what happens when you habituate yourself waiting to send that email until tomorrow? The tomorrow email doesn't look the same thing that it does right now. You know, how many times has Nechama said to me, don't send that email right now. Just give it a few minutes. Don't send that right now. Because you know what? When we have the machar perspective, we're so much more better off. We become the people that we want to be. It's the marshmallow nekuda. There is a mitzvah d'oraisa, and the truth is it also applies to chutz laretz, although it's not so common, and a suffix in chutz laretz is mutter. There is a mitzvah called orla. What is orla?
The first 3 years.
Right, the first 3 years of a fruit, you can't eat it. And then the fourth year is net to revoy, you bring it to Yerushalayim, and the fifth year you can eat it. So what's the reason for the mitzvah of orla? So some say the reason the mitzvah of orla has to do with idol worship. Mm-hmm. Others say orla has to do with the, if you want to give a gift to the Ribbono Shel Olam of your Neta Ravai, you don't want to give the first 3 years of produce. Why? Because usually the first 3 years is very shvach. So you're going to give the first fruits to Hashem, but don't give it the first 3 years because it's going to be shvach, so the fourth year. But look at this Or HaChaim HaKadosh. The Pasuk says in the bottom of verse number 4, V'chisavo el ha'aretz v'netayetem kol eitz machal, you eat, you plant all the trees of eating. That's what the pasuk says.
How
do
they survive the first 3 years?
So hopefully they had from before. Or they had vegetables. This is just for fruits on trees, right? Not for vegetables. So now look at the Or HaChaim HaKadosh. Right next to the mitzvah of Orla is another mitzvah. Lo Sochu Al Hadam. Top of the next column. Or HaChaim HaKadosh. Rav Chaim, the Heliger of Chaim Ben Atar from Tzfat. What does it mean, lo sochu al adam? So the Gemara has several interpretations of this. One is, don't eat from a korban until you do all of the proper avodas. Another one is, don't eat before davening. Another one is, don't eat from an animal until you kill the animal, etc.
How about this being, don't eat before davening?
Yeah.
So the Gemara has a drasha, do not lo sochu, do not eat al adam, until you have asked Hashem to revive your life for today, your circulation system. So there are different opinions in poskim b'sman hazeh. Is it mutter to drink a coffee? Most people say it's mutter to drink coffee in Europe. In Europe, of course, they were dirt poor. So in Europe, drinking coffee with milk and sugar was considered like a chash of a thing. So that's why the Mishnah Berurah quotes from many achronim that you're not allowed to drink milk and coffee in the morning before shacharis. Because that's like a fancy thing. If you just have black coffee, that's not fancy. But many achronim used to say, they said if you have milk and sugar, oh, that's very fancy. But I think today...
So like a $10 Starbucks wouldn't be allowed.
Exactly. So I think today, people generally drink milk with the coffee because it's not considered a chash of a thing. But that's why it's not proper for people, you know, to sit down and have a whole meal before you daven shacharis. It's based on this din. It's not a din d'oraisa, it's based on this pasuk. Anyway... So the Or HaChaim HaKadosh wants to know, what does this pasuk of Lo Sochu Al Adam have to do with the mitzvah of Orla? So look what he says, fascinating. Lirmos, to hint, Masha Amru Zali, quotes from a medrash, Ki Adam Arishon, get this, you ready? Adam Arishon, Ba'achilat Eitz Hadas, in the eating of the Eitz Hadas, Kodem Zman, Hitiru Shu Bechinas Orla. He ate it too early. It was like Orla. She'ima yamamtin ad leil Shabbos Kodesh. If he had waited until Friday night, until leil Shabbos, ha'yamekadish al hayayin. According to one opinion, the Gemara, the Eitz Hadas was grapes. There's no opinion in the Gemara that it was an apple. Maybe it was wheat, maybe it was grapes, maybe something else.
Yeah, wheat, that's enticing.
Challah, he would have had challah. Says the Or HaChaim, exactly. Says the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, v'zeu so devrayim from the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that if Adam Arishon had just waited a few minutes until Friday night, he would have been allowed to eat the Eis Hadas. What was the problem? He couldn't wait 5 minutes. So why is Lo Sochul Al Adam mitzvah next to the mitzvah of Orla? Because he said it's all the same principle. Can you be patient? Can you wait to eat from the animal until you take care of the blood? Can you wait to eat until you eat the Daven Shacharis? Can you wait to eat from the carbon until you do the Zrikas Adam? Can you wait just a few minutes? And that's what it has to do, what it's connected with the mitzvah of Orla. The Chasam Sofer, I saw Rav Baruch Simon has a sefer where he explains, he quotes from the Chasam Sofer to explain what was the whole thing about waiting until Friday night. Because he explains, he says, look, we are physical beings in this world. Sheish Yamim Tavod, we work in the world for 6 days. Shabbos, we tap into our spiritual self. So if he would have just waited until Friday night, the eating of the Eitz Hadas would have been rooted in a Shabbos experience. It would have been built off of spirituality, of ruchnius, of godliness. He would have made kiddush on the Eitz Hadas. And then the whole context for navigating Tov and Ra, it wouldn't have been such a big deal because it would have been built on a foundation of spirituality. But he couldn't wait. So it became a Friday eating. So Friday, what was the Islam? Sushi, Erev Shabbos, whatever. It wasn't rooted in spirituality. If he just would have waited 5 minutes, how much do we gain? So I think this is the second akuda, which is that, yes, on the one hand, the Rambam says we should incentivize, we should agree with temptation bundling, we should promise people that they're gonna be recognized in whatever way. But then there's the counterbalance, which is part of what we need to do as we get older, as we become more mature, is to be able to open up a conversation about saying, you know what? It's not always about the here and now. And adarabba, there are many mitzvos which counter that, which encourage us to wait. Sometimes we have to wait. The mitzvah of taras mishpacha, it means you have to wait. And waiting enriches our lives. It enables us to become our best selves and not those people who are enslaved to impulsivity. So that's kind of the first two ways, I think, of looking at this issue. But there is a third and final way that I wanted to really reflect with you tonight, which is the final issue that researchers talk about is gamification, gamifying. You know, making the project, so they're talking about in the context of work, where you have a work project and you make it into a game. Gamifying, they have a whole section in the book about making work fun, right? What can you do to kind of jazz it up so that this accounting project shouldn't be so deathly boring that we should jazz it up to make it fun? And that model, I think, is worth scrutinizing from a Torah standpoint. Because maybe it's true for work, but I would argue that it's not true for Yiddishkeit. And actually, maybe the opposite. Because the premise of that, of the making work fun slogan and gamifying, the premise is that what we're doing be'etzem is really, it's a slog. And what we need to do is some kind of extrinsic motivation to get you through it so that that's where we get to the end. Is that really what we want from Yiddishkeit?
No, but it's more approachable sometimes, like for kids, the gamifying. I mean, it's not saying that, oh, let the Seder. I mean, it's not you're saying that it's boring, I guess, for them, but it is a way to get them more excited into it.
Totally. And that goes back to the first model of the Rambam, right?
Right, but that's not necessarily, you're not giving them incentives, but just...
And our Seder, we're giving them incentives.
Right, but even if you just made it into it, like... We try not to make it into who's the winner because that's a little bit less.
Right, okay, it doesn't have to be
but
competitive.
But even just to make it fun.
Yes, for sure. That's why the Rambam says that the Seder, you're supposed to give away prizes. You're supposed to give away Kloyos Ve'gozim, totally.
So that's different then.
So I would argue that there's something different. I'll explain to you what I mean by that. I'll explain to you what I mean. Because I think The Seder is a good example of where Bedafka, we're trying to reach children. And for children, it's important, like the Rambam says, we got to keep them awake. We got to get them engaged. We're going to do every kind of stunt that we can.
Not common present.
We got to get, exactly, all these things, chod fin matzos, these are all that, I would put that in the first category of temptation bundling. If you're going to come to the Seder, it's going to be fun. It's going to be great. We're going to have the, you know, and even though what I'm going to tell you, I believe in a minute is the deeper truth, I'm totally into that. You know, I'm the one in our big Siddharim, I'm the responsible for the Oriental trading and the tickets and the prizes and the shtick and the, because I think that is important. But I think the Rambam told us that because we want to get the kids engaged, the little kids. The question becomes, if the totality of our Yiddishkeit is all about temptation bundling, right? That's the question. And that's what I'd like to argue in this last point, actually against gamifying Judaism. Because what it says then is that really, the process is lousy. The process is like doing a spreadsheet. We got to do it, but we got to get to the end. And there's even a danger in, there is a potential danger in an aspect of chinuch when we gamify Yiddishkeit, even using religious and spiritual terms. Right, when we set up for kids, especially for kids, when we set up this model, like, we're going to do all these mitzvahs and we're going to earn so much olam haba. So what are we basically saying then? If it's about olam haba, then it's kind of like gamifying this world, which on some level is true, but is that the kind of life that Hashem really wants for us? Does He want us to look at... Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks for coming.
Do we really want that kind of world? It's
well, I got to tell you that, I mean, this is, but the Rambam himself, you know, when you're Saras Mechuva, you got to look as if you're a Beinoni.
Good.
One thing tips. I mean, it's all about mitzvos and tipping the scales. And
good. So I want to argue.
That's all a game, mitzvos.
Yes.
Rack them up.
Exactly. So my question is, are we satisfied with that?
For winning.
Good. But even so, is it about, you know, is it all just about thinking what is going to be at the end of the game? Part of the problem with that, this is not the full problem. Oh, so that's the question. Because what are you saying about the process? That is goof for the question. If what we're saying with this is that the process is really like accounting, it's wretched. You just have to get through it. And don't worry, there will be a prize at the end. What you've basically said is that the process is very unpleasant, completely. Besides for the fact that you can,
like you're inviting people in, you're getting them, you're kind of like getting them hooked with some of these things, and then they'll take it.
Okay, good.
So it's not being that just like to get through it, but it's
okay.
You may be surprised along the way.
Okay, good. So exactly. So what we're going to present now, I do not believe that it is a stira to the Rambam. I don't think that it contradicts the importance of incentivizing and all of these shtiklach, but I think it's got to be deeper. Because I think there's actually a big hazard in this model. In the model that says that the process is difficult, it's rough, but don't worry, it'll pay off later. I think we're going to lose people. If that's basically what we're saying, that don't worry, there'll be a big payoff later in Olam Haba, a lot of people, they're not interested in Olam Haba. They've never seen Olam Haba. They don't know what that means. It's totally abstract. And you know what they're going to be like? I would rather go downtown clubbing than worry about Olam Haba. I'll worry about Olam Haba another time. The danger of making it such that all of Yiddishkeit is predicated either on instant gratification, because not all of Yiddishkeit is about instant gratification, because some of it is about marshmallowing. And not just that, not just instant gratification, but saying, okay, instead we're going to gamify it, so you're going to rack up as many Super Mario coins for Olam Haba, but what if I'm just tired of playing the game? If the game is so miserable, if somebody came to you and said you're going to do spreadsheets for 50 years with, what's that? The rest of us. Okay, fine. You're talking to someone who loves spreadsheets. Right? Is that is the question. And I think that's where sometimes in maybe this old school paradigm of chinuch, we need to re-examine it. Not for little kids, but maybe for us, for bigger kids. I'll give you an example. Take a look at this Egleital. The Egleital was written by the Halakhic Sachet of a Rebbe. And he says in his introduction, Hilcha Shabbos, right-hand side, Midei Dabri Zachar Eskar. I want to tell you as I'm speaking to you, Masha Shamati Ktsas Bnei Adam. I heard some people, Toen Miderech HaSeichel. They went away from the path of the intellect, from the learning of Torah. And they said, "Ki halomed, a person who learns, umechadish chidushim, and he comes up with innovative insights. Intellectually, he's stimulated, he's inspired. It's geshmak. Umisaneg, v'sameach umisaneg. He's really enjoying it. Ein zen limerat Torah kol kach lishma. Yeah, that's not such a high level of learning.
No.
Yeah." He says, I heard people say that if you learn and you enjoy it, that's not lishma. A person who's learning and enjoying, that's no good. That's what he says he heard, the Sachet Sheva Rebbe. He says, I heard people say that. You know what's supposed to be? Learning is supposed to be, it's supposed to be bitter and wretched and boring. And if you do that, then you get schar. That's basically...
Well, there's something to be said about cutting your teeth, you know, overlearning.
For sure. And that goes back to the marshmallow. It doesn't mean that everything in life is fun, but this is basically saying that learning, which is kind of a microcosm for Judaism, it's meant to be bitter, but it's good for you. So, you know, bitter.
It's an anti-art scroll philosophy.
Meaning
that, you know, if you read an art scroll, you know, it reads beautifully.
Right.
You know, and you can learn, but you know, you're not necessarily learning the building blocks.
Okay, so but that's a second question. That's a methodological question. Right. This is more of a real substantive question, which is, are we supposed to be enjoying this process? Or is it supposed to be, you know, grin and bear it?
Why can't it be both?
Excellent. So I think there are two things.
Just middle of the road.
Go forward. She likes spreadsheets.
Good.
So for some people, that would be grueling work. But she's at work, let's say, doing her spreadsheets.
Yes.
She's enjoying her work.
Good. So that's why. So I'll go back to your point in a second, Lori. But first, the point, the Rambam says that there are 613 mitzvos. Why? Because different people have. Exactly. Different people have different interests. Different people have different interests. So somebody might be inspired by Hachnasas Archim, and somebody else, they'll do it, but it's not their thing. Somebody else is much more interested in Staka, or in Chinuch, or whatever that mitzvah is. So yes, that's true. And of course, yes, there is the balance, that's the Har Sinai balance, between Kaf Aleim Har Kigigas, the mountain. Did it look like a chuppah? Or did it look like a threatening barrel that was going to kill us? A little bit of both. Meaning there was a commitment level, and there was the other side. But what the Egleital is talking about, and I don't want to draw a caricature, but I myself, growing up in a firm environment, have heard this at times. I've heard this message kind of like, well, it's meant to be tough medicine, so you got to take it. Mm-hmm. Right? So the first mahalach, the Rambam's mahalach, is the Mary Poppins mahalach. A spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down. You know, if you incentivize it enough, it'll make it worthwhile. So the first answer is incentivize it. But what that says still is that it's bitter medicine. What was she giving the kids, Mary Poppins? Clam oil or something, remember?
Yeah.
Some cod oil. Cod oil, I think it was cod oil. Julie Andrews and the cod oil. What's happening here, the guy says to the Sachet Sheva Rebbe, he says, you know, you can only really learn, it's only learning Lishma if it's bitter, if it's cod oil. The Rebbe says, I don't know what you're talking about. I totally don't agree with you. Adaraba, go 7 lines in. Ki ze ikar mitzvas limud haTorah liosas v'sameach u'misaneg v'limudo. The main mitzvah of learning is to enjoy it. Now, it doesn't mean that every moment of learning is always the most enjoyable. Sometimes, just like in the marshmallow case, we benefit by cutting our teeth, like you said, being committed. But the question is the question of perspective. Does Judaism, does it taste like cod oil that we have to just hold our nose and get it down? Or is our experience of Judaism one which is fulfilling? This is the difference between extrinsic and intrinsic. The spoonful of sugar model with the first Rambam model of the Shelo Lishma incentive model gets it down, but it's totally extrinsic. And the minute that you pull away the extrinsic, it's going to disappear. Why do we use the extrinsic model? Mitoch Shelo Lishma? Because we hope that at some point, Mitoch Shelo Lishma, Baal Lishma. But it's only going to be Baal Lishma if we find that the Judaism itself is meaningful. You can pay somebody to come to shul every day. You can pay someone to come to shul and make a minyan on Shabbos. You can bribe them. You can incentivize them. But is the experience of bribing them to come to shul a spoonful of sugar with cod oil? Or what it's supposed to be is maybe when kids are kids and they don't fully appreciate what it means to have a conversation with the Ribbono Shel Olam and what it means to put away your cell phone for 5 minutes and what it means to hear the Torah being read and what it means to connect to Masorah and to have quiet time, to have tefillah b'tzibur, to spiritually connect with all of Amcha Beis Yisrael. You can't teach that to a five-year-old. So a five-year-old, you give him a lollipop to come to shul. But is that the goal, that a person should be 55 and we're giving them lollipops to come to shul because they think that coming to shul is like cod oil? So we give them a lollipop. Or is the point of Yiddishkeit to find over the course of our life the aspects, the elements of Yiddishkeit to realize that it itself is valuable, that it itself is meaningful, that it itself is worthwhile. And then at a certain point, you know what? We don't need the sugar anymore. It doesn't mean that it's not good once in a while. Everybody likes a little bit of sugar.
No, but the point is you got the person.
Exactly. So that's exactly what the Rambam is saying. When the kids are kids, when they're little kids, so you start, you get them in the door. And today, you have kids, they might be 60 years old. They were never educated. They were never inspired. So we got to do something to get them in the door. But if when they come in the door, what's their experience of shul? If their experience of shul and Judaism is cod oil, then we're always just going to have to keep feeding them sugar. That's the problem. If the only model that we have of making Judaism great for people is feeding them candy that's external, then at some point some people will be like, first of all, I can get better candy somewhere else. You're going to pay me $10 to come to shul. I'd rather go to a casino on a Saturday morning. I'll make more money than the $10 you're going to give me to shul. This extrinsic motivation, it runs out of gas. Be'etzem. People will tire of it. Yeah, you can go from one thing to the next, and we're going to keep doing it. We're going to have shul dinners, and we're going to have raffles, and we're going to have fun things. It's good. It's okay. But the question is, did we ever shift the model? Did we ever grow out of the mitoch shelo lishma giving people candy? That is the question. And for a lot of people, going to shul is horrible. They hate it. They go to shul because they get a spoonful of sugar. They see their friends, or they have kiddush, or it's a chance to get out of the house.
Or maybe they just went group to groups their whole life.
They never even got a shul experience that was authentic to them. So this is the question that we're facing now. Are people coming to shul? Why are people not coming back to shul? I would argue that many people are not coming back to shul. I don't know anything. I'm a nobody. But I'm wondering if many people are not coming back to shul. Why? Because they found that the spoonful of sugar at home is better than the spoonful of sugar going to shul. Yeah, they like going to shul and having a kiddush with their friends, but they like it better sleeping at home and eating entomins and drinking coffee, reading the New York Times.
They're missing something completely about shul.
Exactly. Yeah. And that is the etzem nekuda. That what they got from shul was miserable, was cod oil. So at some point, why are they going back for it?
Not to throw a wrench in things, but I can tell you, when I was at home, in my prison state,
it's nice.
I had some good davening.
Oh, it's just no question.
But it was good davening.
Totally. Yes. Yes, we had that.
I know.
Totally. I'm oversimplifying it some way. But shul is just an example.
But I think also I don't think they had that in their house.
Exactly. Because when they were growing up, shul was miserable for them.
Right,
this
okay,
is
right.
the whole
so then,
structure.
So they didn't daven during COVID, or they were davening and it was super. They weren't
So this is exactly the Nakuda. If all we do in our entire Jewish life is incentivize people with candy, at some point they're going to tire of the candy, whatever that candy looks like, whatever that Shlomo Lishma looks like.
Is it worth it still because the people you are going to get?
So that's what I'm saying. And this goes back to what you said before. I'm not arguing, and the Rambam himself did not say that we swear off candy. Of course we should do things to get people to come back to shul. But the question, the bigger question is not how much candy do we need to provide. Is the question, okay, so now we got to like double down on the Kiddush and we've got to have sushi every week to get people in the door? Is it all about the candy or is it about something else? Which is that the Yiddishkeit itself should be great. Do we have to pay people to light Shabbos candles? Or is it beautiful to light Shabbos candles? And this is the last Nakuda. This is a sefer, a new sefer called Bayam Darkecha. It's really late, so I want to just see it in a little piece. But this is a collected teachings based on the teachings of Rav Ichamaya Morgenstern, who's a great mashpia in Israel. Rav Yitzchak Meir, he's written several svarim called Yam HaChachma. So an anonymous group of Talmidim, they got together, they wrote a sefer based on his teachings called Bayom Darkecha. Yud Mem, Yam, stands for Yitzchak Meir, Ichamayer. So Rav Ichamayer, he's teaching this whole idea. What's this? What's the beginning of the Sefer Bayom Darkecha? The basis. What's that? Aleph, Lis Anig Ba'avoda. That a person should enjoy being a Jew. That it should be geschmack to be a Jew. Doesn't mean it's always fun and easy, but it should be something we enjoy doing. HaTorah HaKadosha Marba L'Dabra L'Inyan HaTainug Ba'avodas Hashem Yisbarach. The Torah speaks at length about how a person should enjoy being close to Hashem. That's the goal. V'yomeris, it says in the Pasuk in Tehillim, Tamu Re'u Ki Tov Hashem. Taste and see how good it is, God. Shimu Shemoa Elai V'ichlu Tov V'sisani V'defin Nafshachem D'rachel Darchei Noam. We ask every day, V'harivna, Hashem, please make learning sweet for us. Ki koach, top of the second column, ki koach ha'ana v'atanuk, the enjoyment, she'ashem yizbarach nasam b'nefesh ha'adam hu davar ikari ma'od. It's fundamental that you should be happy being a Jew. What do we worry about? We worry about so many kids who we know, who grew up in our community, they voted with their feet, they're going elsewhere. Did they ever experience Tamuru Kitov Hashem? Did they feel that Yiddishkeit is good? That it was enjoyable? Or was it a set of rules that somebody shoved down their throat with some sugar, but at a certain point they decide, you know what, I'll find my own sugar somewhere else. Because they didn't find that Yiddishkeit was good. This is the question. This is the challenge. Right? It's a reality that we're facing. How many of the kids who have stayed within, I would call it, the circle of inspiration, how many of them grew up being beaten down versus how many of them had a warm Shabbos table, they loved the Zmiros, they had an experience that was positive? I would venture to guess that many of them, and that many of the ones who left, either they had a negative experience or they found that it didn't speak to them. It wasn't enjoyable. So as opposed to... Or it's right.
They're looking for like just too much perfection. You
know? There are a lot of different factors. I'm not saying this is the only one, but this is a big one. And this is what he talks about later in this piece, that there is a danger. There is a danger that if a person doesn't find Judaism enjoyable, you know what they're going to do? They're going to find enjoyable somewhere else. If they don't find that Shabbos is meaningful, it doesn't always have to be fun, right? Tisha B'Av is not fun, but it could also be meaningful. If they don't find that it's meaningful, they're going to find meaning and fun somewhere else. They're going to find it somewhere else. So yes, we need to get them in the door with something that's exciting. So we need to make the Seder very exciting. And people have great memories from that. And it's so important to incentivize and to get people in the door. But is that the entirety of it? It can't be. Because if it is, at a certain point, the sugar and the games and the shtick and the shalol lishma, it evaporates. It's not enough. It's not enough to sustain. The extrinsic motivation is not magnetic enough to pull you in, especially in an age like ours when there are so many other things. It has to be that a person, you know, you talked about once about doing dafyomi. you know people in your family who do Daf Yomi. You feel like, I'm learning, I'm growing, I'm accomplishing, I'm connecting to Hashem. It's a good feeling intrinsically. You're not doing Daf Yomi because someone gives you a dollar a day. Maybe when you're a kid, you do Daf Yomi. Like when I learn with my kids. So you give them a little prize. But when you grow older, if you're only doing Daf Yomi because they're giving you a dollar a day, you're going to stop doing Daf Yomi. You're going to do Daf Yomi because you enjoy it. You're learning Torah Hashem. You're accomplishing. There's a good feeling with that. But if it's miserable, who's going to bother? No one's going to want to do it. So this, I think, is the biggest challenge. This is the biggest challenge. And I think that this book, this secular book, is a great way to open up the conversation. To open up the conversation about how do we balance these different factors. The first nekuda, that it's okay to do shalol lishma, that we need to play games and have fun things. I'm telling you, I grew up in a shtiebel, the Rebbe of our shtiebel. He was a Holocaust survivor, satmer, groomed, weisesach, and peilach, the ganze zach, and he was the candy man. He was the candy man. That was our association with shul. Was a Rebbe who spoke Yiddish who gave us candy with a long white beard. There's a place for that. There's definitely a place for that. And how beautiful and meaningful it is, even as an adult, to think back to that. There's a place for that. At the same time, there's also the marshmallow effect, the machar, that we have to learn that life is not about grabbing. Because you see what happens to people who grab from everybody else. Look what happens in the news. You see the destruction of society with people who everything is about the impulsivity. And then on the third hand, I think it's at the deepest level, which is that the question of incentivizing and not incentivizing and getting in the marshmallow mode or not the marshmallow mode, it's actually a red herring. Because if at its core, Yiddishkeit doesn't have hatanug ba'avoda, if it doesn't have meaning and purpose and engagement, if it's not really compelling, it doesn't always have to be roller coaster fun. It doesn't have to be spreadsheet fun, right? But it's got to be worthwhile. People have to feel like, I want to do this. Because if they don't, no amount of incentivizing is going to last. Because then, you know what? They're going to be more interested in communism or Bundism or nationalism or the internet or Vegas or, you know, any generation, whatever you're going to put out there. It's not going to be enough to motivate extrinsically. And that's where I think there's a big difference between Avodas Hashem, Yiddishkeit, and this secular book. Because the secular book, there's nothing inherently valuable in the process. If you could get the spreadsheet done for work in 10 minutes or 20 minutes, there's nothing inherent important about the spreadsheet. You just need to get the result. But in Yiddishkeit, life in this world is about living with the Ribono Shel Olam. So it's all about the process. Is the Ribono Shel Olam at my table? Do I say a bracha? If I say a bracha, then my eating also comes with the Ribono Shel Olam. And that's good. So the Ribono Shel Olam says, you can have a delicious dinner and make a bracha. It's exactly the opposite of what the Eglay Tal was proposing from that guy. The Ribono Shel Olam doesn't want us to live a miserable, wretched life. He wants us to live a good life. That's what he says. Durachea darchinoam v'harev no Hashem. Tamuru kitov Hashem. It is good to live with God in this world.
Yeah, but that's the marshmallow effect, but not as much. I mean, every time you take a glass of water, you have to say a bracha. So you're
delaying gratification. Absolutely, for sure.
Seconds, so you're still delayed.
Yes.
And so now that you're positive of what you're doing.
Yes. So built into Yiddishkeit, Orla and brachos and losochol al adam is the marshmallow effect, which builds us. But if Yiddishkeit is only the marshmallow effect, you can't live like that, right?
Because no, if you think about the bracha that you're saying, that it won't just be the bracha.
Exactly. Why? Because now, instead of saying that this bracha is a marshmallow effect, though I have to straitjacket myself and hold myself back, and don't worry, in 5 minutes I'll get the reward. No. Yeah. The bracha becomes an opportunity to be present for a moment. The bracha itself is meaningful, is valuable. It's bringing Hashem into the world. So that's exactly the nekuda. It goes from being just a marshmallow, which, you know, how many marshmallows tests can you take, to no, a bracha is a great gift. It's an interrupter of my day that says, you know what? I'm living with Hashem Yisparach. I'm a divine spark in this world. That's exactly the thing. You can have the marshmallow, that's one level of teaching, but it's much deeper. And so the challenge for us is to make sure that when we are educating our kids and when we're sending out messages in the community, it's not just incentivizing with prizes, which is important, and it's not just giving marshmallow tests, which is also important, but neither of those are the deepest intrinsic level of Tamu Ru'u Kitov Hashem. Because that's what the Talmidim of Rav Yechamayah are saying. Im chas v'sholom ha'odom lo yizke l'tanug b'avodas Hashem. If a person doesn't feel that that bracha is meaningful, if they don't feel that they're connecting to godliness, that their life is infused with meaning, zu sakana atzuma, it's really going to be a danger, because it's yiksha olav ma'ud l'eskaber. This passage is so real. We see it with so many people that instead of seeing the bracha as a gift, they see it as a burden. So they say, eh. So I think the answer to this whole nekuda of how to bring about change is to have more conversations about where's the meaning. Where's the meaning in shul? Where's the meaning in brachos? Where's the meaning in learning? Where's the taina? Where's the geshmak? How do we find that? How do we nurture that? How do we create the intrinsic motivation, not the extrinsic? So I think this chapter is actually a foil into what we really need to accomplish. For some people, we've gone through our whole lives with people either telling us, do this because you're going to get candy, called Olam Haba, or do this because it's good for you, because it teaches you self-discipline. Right? Those are two messages that we get. But maybe those two messages are good, but the deepest thing that we really need is the third message. You want to be truest to yourself, you want to live a deep, meaningful life, that's why you should do this. That's why you should feel connected. It's the intrinsic motivation that I think is really the most important.